So we've talked about a capacitor. A capacitor is the first element of a circuit that you've now studied, an electrical circuit. But it's not, we've considered it in a very restrictive case where we just have a voltage and a capacitor, and we're really not thinking about a circuit fully. I mean, we're not talking about some of the important aspects. So the first thing to worry about is something called electric current. All right. And electric current, we usually use the symbol I to represent electric current. And what electric current is basically some change in charge or amount of charge per time. Okay? So you could think of, for instance, a wire, a conducting wire. All right? And we'll even go back to that example that I did with the water in the pipe. It's vaguely like that. You've got these little electrons which can get torn loose from their atoms in a conductor. They're very loosely attached. And they can move. Okay? Now, if we have an electric field, the way that we get them to move is we put an electric field in here going to the left. These are negative charges. They're going to want to go in the other direction. Okay? But the important thing here is that charge is moving. We're moving charge. Okay? And by moving this charge, this is by doing this, we then permit a whole host of things to happen. Okay? Because this charge can be made to do different things. We can store it. We can generate heat with it. We can eventually, you're going to see how we can use it to generate a magnetic field. We can use it to create an oscillating voltage. We can use it to generate light, electromagnetic waves, all kinds of things that we can do once we can get these charges to move. Okay? And depending on the properties of whatever this material is, okay, it tells us something about how these electrons are allowed to move, given the way that we, say, apply an electric field in here. Okay? So this is basically the subject of what we want to talk about. So this is electric current, and there's one of the aspects which matters here is how well things can move in this material. And the topic that we'll talk about there is resistance. So materials generally have some resistance to electrons propagating through them. A conductor has very little resistance. Electrons can move very easily. But in atoms or molecules where the electrons are tightly bound, there's a lot of resistance. Those electrons, we can't get them to budge at all. Okay? So, and then there's, you know, materials have resistances everywhere in between. Okay, the other thing about this is that this is now the transition from what we were doing, and we are still doing, of electrostatics. Okay, so the charges are just there. Okay, we're not going to worry too much about whether they're moving or not. We've already started to introduce the idea of moving charges in the last chapter, but for the most part, we've been dealing with electrostatics, okay, to electrodynamics. The charges start to move. Now, we can consider a case where we could have, you know, where we're not dealing with electrostatics anymore. The charges are moving, but we can have a steady state current, okay, which means that I is constant. And that's actually, that's the situation we're going to be working under for now. Okay. Okay, so there's a couple things I want to go into here. So if we consider, let's, let me try to illustrate this a little better. So every atom in here has some electrons, and these electrons can be going in different ways. There's a convention here about what we mean by electric current and the direction that it's moving. So the electric field, let's say we have an electric field that's going in this direction, okay? If the electric field lines are coming in this direction, that means that negative charges want to go in this direction, okay? Now, it's the negative charges that are moving, right? As we talked about in the very beginning of the class, the positive charges are very heavy. So they don't want to move at all. It's only the electrons that can be removed from those atoms and moved around. That's what's actually moving. However, the way that we talk about the direction of current, the direction, is as if the positive charges are moving. Okay? So, in other words, this, even though the electrons, the actual charge that's moving is the electrons, and it's going this way, what we actually, the convention that we actually use here is that this makes it look as if positive charge is moving this way. Okay? But the positive charge isn't moving. Okay? But it looks like it is, in the sense that if I had charge neutral over here and all the negative charges go over here, all of a sudden I'm going to have positive charge show up here. So it's like positive charge moved over here, which isn't what happened, but it's just a convention. Okay? So we define the direction of current to be the direction that a positive charge would be moving. Okay? So that can be a little bit confusing. The units here are called amps or amperes. Okay? But let's consider a situation in which we have 5 amps going in this direction, okay, and 5 amps coming in this direction. And let's say we have a wire here. Well, there's always got to be conservation of charge, okay? This is a steady state situation. So charge in a steady state, all right, charge can't pile up. So what that means is that on this wire, that current has to be 5 amps plus 5 amps, has to be the sum. Because all the charge coming in here and here per second has to be the same amount as the amount of charge going out per second. Okay? Okay. Okay, now there's one other thing that I want to describe here, which I've kind of alluded to and might be confusing. Let's consider a wire. All right, now we have a bunch of atoms in here. And these atoms are usually arranged in the material by something called a lattice. A lot of solids have atoms positioned or molecules positioned in a very regular sequence, okay? In crystals, it's often a very specific geometrical shape. But so these atoms are pinned to that lattice. They're held there, okay? But then in a conductor, of course, the electrons themselves can move around, all right? And what actually happens is that these electrons essentially, they don't just travel unimpeded through this conductor. They actually keep running into things. So it's as if an electron here came and ran into this atom and usually would be, say, absorbed, whatever, and then another electron would come up and run into this atom, and then another one would come out and go here and here and the next one, etc. And so this thing is sort of just bumping around as it goes through. Okay? Now, we've already said, how do we get this even to be moving in a consistent direction? Well, if we put an electric field that's going that way, that's how we do it. Okay? The actual way that we get this electric field going is by applying a voltage. Okay? If I have a delta V difference between here and here, one end of the wire to another, that's basically imposing an electric field on that conductor. So all the electrons inside of it say, oh, wait a minute, there's an electric field here, I'm free to move, and they start moving. Okay? Now, the problem that we have, but there's one question. I mean, what did we say in the last, two chapters ago about electric fields inside of conductors? What did we conclude about them?
About what?
About electric fields inside conductors. There's zero inside of a conductor, right? So what the hell am I talking about? I mean, I'm saying that there's an electric field inside this wire. That doesn't make any sense. I just contradicted what we spent probably a half a day on 2 weeks ago. So why is this not contradictory? Well, it's true that it's not hollow, but that's not why I haven't contradicted myself. I mean, it's a good try, but what's coming into play here that was different than what we did 2 weeks ago? No? You're getting there. Okay, you're getting there. Yes. What it is what we took that situation was a static situation. We explicitly said that, you know, if you had an electric field inside the conductor, the charges would feel that force associated with it, and they would move. And they would all go to the external surface of that conductor. And the net result is they all collect on the surface, and there's no movement of charge in the conductor. They've all moved as much as they can, and it's static. And when you get to that situation in a conductor, when it's static, and all the charge is on the surface, then you have no electric field. But that's not the situation we have here. The situation we have here is we're putting an electric field here, and we're causing that motion that we were assuming was done when we talked 2 weeks ago, okay? So here we're actually putting it, and we're saying, okay, there is now in this conductor an electric field. We're applying a potential difference to the different ends of the conductor, and so as you say, those electrons are sort of bouncing around through the material. And they will do that until, I mean, they will do that basically until there's no, they don't feel any more field. Okay? One result would be that in the case of, if this potential difference was being applied by a battery, the battery voltage ran down. So all of the electrons that were on its negative terminal, okay, they've now gone all the way through, and there's no more motion possible. So there's no more potential across this thing, and the charges have moved. Okay, that would be the result. Okay? But this is now a changing situation where that was a static situation. The other thing that may not be so obvious either is that what happens when I apply a force to an object? What happens to its velocity? The velocity increases. So there's an acceleration, okay? But this right here implies I can have a steady quantity of charge that's moving through this, which implies that there is a constant velocity, not a changing velocity, okay? If what was happening was that I applied an electric field at time equals zero, then if these electrons were sort of unimpeded, they'd feel a force, and they would accelerate. So at any instant in time, going through this cross-section of the wire, I'd see some amount of charge. The next second, they would all have accelerated. I'd see even more charge, and so the current would go up. But that's not what happens. That's certainly not the situation we're talking about here. We're talking about a case where we have a constant current. And the reason that that happens is that electrons are not moving unimpeded through this material. That's not what happens. They're actually moving very slowly. They're going a very short distance. Okay? I can't remember the distance. But in any case, they only get accelerated for something on the order of 10 to the 19th seconds. Okay? Sorry. 10 to the minus 14 seconds. So this electron doesn't go very far. It gets accelerated, runs into an atom, and then that's the end of it. But by doing that, another electron comes off, gets accelerated, runs into an atom, and then another one, whatever. So this velocity, okay, the net velocity here, we can call the drift velocity, okay? And this velocity is, I gotta remember the number. I have it on here somewhere. So this velocity is on the order of 0.1 meters per hour. So in 1 hour, that electron can only go about that far, okay? Which seems like a problem because, the power station is much further away from these lights than this distance. So why doesn't it take months when I hit the power switch for the lights to turn on? The reason is because it's just like in wave motion. It's not how fast the charges themselves are moving. It's how fast, essentially, the wave front, if you will, propagates through the material. Okay? So these electrons are interacting with these atoms by an electromagnetic interaction, and that will be clearer as we go through the semester. But that electromagnetic interaction is an electromagnetic, or EM, wave, okay? And that propagates at a velocity around the speed of light, or c. So even though the electrons themselves are going incredibly slow, I mean, it's just a crawl. You can walk orders of magnitude faster than these things are going through that conductor. The actual rate at which the charges, you know, there is charge that will come out the end here and will go here. The rate at which that communication is happening is essentially the speed of light. It depends a little bit on the kind of material, but a conductor to an order of magnitude or better, to a factor of two, say, it's the same. I think you may even do a measurement in your lab, if you're taking a lab, where you measure the speed of the propagation of that wave in a wire. And, okay? Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about what the implications of this are for how charge is going to move through material. So if we take this situation here, okay, we've got this charge that's moving, all right, we can come up with a parameter called the current density. Okay? So the current density we denote by the capital letter J. Okay? And the current density is going to be equal to the number of electrons, basically, charge carriers, times the drift velocity, times the charge of each one of those. Okay, so this is essentially amount of charge per second. Okay, let's discuss the voltage. So in general, if I have the potential difference, we said we had a potential difference here. And let's say we have some length, that's some length L, and we have an electric field in this conductor. We can relate the electric field, the length, and the voltage in this way. All right? V equals EL. L is the length of this conductor that we're considering. Okay, if I go through this, I can sort of rearrange terms, and so I can rewrite this as, forgetting the vectors here, JL over sigma. I can also write this as the J is also equal to the current divided by the area. So this surface has an area, okay? So I can write this as I L over A sigma. And what we actually do, another way to write this would be I, L, rho is a property of the actual material that we're dealing with called the resistivity, okay? And so this is a property of the material. L and A are properties of the geometry of this particular material that we have that we're applying a voltage to. So these are all constants, And then the current is something I can vary in this simple, whatever this circuit is, where I have a battery, say, applied to the ends of this material. Okay? So I actually could call this capital R, which is called resistance. Okay? So I can write this relationship here. Okay? this relationship too, is called Ohm's law. Okay? This can be true for any given current. There is some factor that gives you the voltage. What we see in many cases is that for most conductors, but not all of them, if we were to plot voltage and current, there would be a slope. The relationship would be constant. There are actually conductors where it doesn't look like that. It can have some other shape. But there are, so this proportionality constant may be, if this proportionality constant is a function of the current, then we don't have Ohm's law. That's a different situation. Okay? Ohm's law is a case when R is a constant. And that's a specific case. Turns out that in most or many conductors, that's what happens. There are some very important cases where that is not what happens. All right? Semiconductors, what we use in computer chips, basically devices in which the material, the electrons, can only move in very specific ways, and the resistance is depends significantly on the current. There are materials in which called diodes, in which current can go one way but not the other way. So if you go this way, they're essentially a conductor. The resistance is very small. But if you go in the opposite direction, they essentially become an insulator, and the current can't move at all. The electrons can't propagate. So there are different kinds of materials, but many conductors obey Ohm's law, where R is a constant for all or at least an enormous range of currents. And so this is a very useful relationship to keep in mind, where R is a constant. Okay? The units of Ohm's of resistance are called ohms, and they're written as a capital letter omega. And one ohm equals, and it's basically from this relationship, equals 1 volt per amp. So let's imagine that I have a circuit, okay? Now there's a symbol for a resistor we use called this. And it's just sort of this zigzag. It's just, you know, trying to convey that it's hard for electrons to get through there, basically, but not impossible. So there's a resistance here, okay, and there's a voltage here, okay? So that's a simple resistance with a voltage. And so when we look at this, what we could say is that there's going to be some when electrons are moving through this circuit, okay, when they get to a resistor, they heat the resistor up, okay. It's almost like friction. I mean, it's related in that sense. So the electrons that come through here will dissipate heat. Okay? I mean, they're doing work to get through this material. All right? So they're going to dissipate some heat. And there is a total amount of power that is... the rate at which this heat is generated is reflected in an amount of power that's rated. So let me say it this way. So in general, if I have this happening, okay, then the amount of energy being dissipated per time is going to be the power. Okay? So this is a general relationship that you would have talked about in physics 1303. Now, in our case, this dU/dt is going, so okay. So let's get rid of the p for a moment here. So the dU, all right, is going to be equal to some amount of charge times a voltage over dt, which is going to be equal to whatever the current is times some amount of time times the voltage over delta t. Okay? And I can cancel these out, and so what I get is this, which equals the power, is going to be equal to the current times the voltage. All right? So this is true in general for these kinds of circuits, that if I have a current and I have a voltage, then some power is going to be dissipated, and that's what this is expressing. But in conjunction with Ohm's law, this actually, we know that V equals IR. So I can rewrite this as P equals, now I can substitute IR for V, and then I would get I squared R. That's one relationship that's true for Ohm's law. Or I can write this as I equals V over R. And in that case, I have V squared over R. Okay? So both of these relationships are true for Ohm's law. This one is true in general, P equals IV. But P equals I squared R or P equals V squared R over R, those are true in the Ohm's law case. Okay?